Welcome in, everybody, to the Longhorn Republic, your source for Texas Longhorn news, sports, and opinions with a bit of snark built in. We are a podcast of Burnt Orange Nation, and you can find more great Texas Longhorn content over at Burnt Orange Nation. Oh, wait, we don't have to do that part anymore.
Leave that in.
If we did cold opens. We might start doing cold opens now.
Maybe we do cold opens now.
Welcome in, everybody, to the Longhorn Republic, your source for Texas Longhorn news, sports, and opinions with a bit of snark built in. If you like what we do, please leave us a rating or review on Apple Podcasts and Spotify. Helps get the show out there, boost the metrics and all that. Share it with your friends who have you found it, whether it was Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Stitcher, TuneIn, Spotify, anywhere where you find fine podcast content. You can find Kyle and myself. Connect with us on social media at Longhorn Pod on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram, The Longhorn Republic. Or shoot us an email, longhornrepublicpod@gmail.com. My name is Gerald Goodridge. I'm your host this week, like I am every week. And I'm joined by a man who loves cold opens, Kyle Carpenter. Kyle, how are you?
I love him. You know, we're in a whole new era. We could be like Gerald's other podcast, which honestly, it was all good, but you just had to stay for the first 30 seconds, which was the wonderful cold open. I'm here, Gerald. We are post Y2 Vox, Y2K, the new millennium. We are still here. We have made it. If you're hearing us, we have made it through the digital airwaves into the exact same feed. Thank you for staying subscribed. If you were a true Vox Media loyalist and you unsubscribed when you found out we became an independent podcast, boy, I'd like to have you on the podcast. What an interesting point of view on the world you have. Don't know if that applies to anyone at all. You probably won't be here hearing this. But yes, all of you, thank you for continuing to listen as Gerald and I branch. Latest iteration of this multi-year journey.
New and uncharted future it is, Kyle, but we're excited to go. Honestly, everything's going to basically be the same. It's the same show. They've given us all of the rights. We just had to like get rid of some of the Burnt Orange Nation branding, which I get, right? They own that. And Kyle and I are actually both still affiliated with BON for our writing and blogging needs, but the podcast, brand new, all new, same stuff, doesn't really matter. But we're not here to talk about us. We're here to talk about something else that's new. Rodney Terry, new Texas head basketball coach, led the Longhorns to their first Elite Eight since 2008, but could not reach the first Final Four since TJ Ford was on campus, and a heartbreaker in that one. We'll talk about baseball, doing big things, sweeping Texas Tech. Currently still playing, though. Top of the eighth, up 5-2, runners on the corners. Two outs. We'll see how that turns out. Hopefully they're done by the time we get there. Obviously, Down the 40 National Championship competition happened this weekend, so we'll catch up with all of the goings-on. On the 40, we'll bang the drum, burn orange lenses, all that fun stuff you love at the end of the podcast. But let's start at the top on the hardwood. Texas goes to the Elite Eight and actually wins a very convincing game over Xavier, 83-71, and honestly, 12 points doesn't belie how lopsided that game actually was. Took their foot off the gas, about 4 minutes left. Xavier started to push things a little bit, and that's fine. Dylan Disu played at the opening tip, but didn't play many minutes. He had a bone bruise, but Rodney Terry wanted to give him a shot because he's a big part of the reason why Texas got there, and so was able to play a few possessions, but ultimately did not play for the rest of the weekend. Texas came out big in that one. And then after squandering a massive lead in the Sunday game against Miami, Texas fell 88-81, which that 7-point margin does not really give you an indication of how close that game was. I think it was a tie game with like a minute left, but Texas squandered a double-digit lead. We've heard that before. Usually on the football field, though, but a lot to dissect from this weekend. But I think the biggest story is Texas didn't really seem to miss Dylan Disu against Xavier, but there is a big presence missing in the middle against Miami, and that's really what kept Miami in the game early and allowed them to finish well late.
Yeah, I mean, Texas had the fortune of being pretty healthy all year, right? It's, a rigorous Big 12 schedule where you're banging bodies, you're playing tough physical defenses, you're on the road in some tough locations. It was a grind of a season, and all in all, Texas was relatively healthy for it. It was pretty unfortunate that the injury bug, and then that excludes Tyrese Hunter's late game cramps. I think 34 out of the 38 games this season. I kid, but it all kind of came in that Miami game at once. Obviously, the Disu one was for Xavier in Texas. You know, really rallied to show up in his absence. We talked about three keys being shooting the three-pointer, defending the three-pointer, and Dylan Disu. One of those keys was gone after 2 minutes. And Christian Bishop, to his credit, stepped up. The entire team stepped up in that one with five Longhorns in double figures. But in the second game since we've last potted, in the Elite Eight game against Miami, there was a Disu-sized hole, and then Marcus Carr also, for the second time this postseason, had a big just absolutely railroad him, which again is not a terrible strategy, right? Take the 15-yard unnecessary roughness, maybe you ring the guy's bell. I kid, but you know two's a pattern, I guess. But in this one, it was their giant of a man who is thick boy Omir. Going up for a ball that, you know, Texas made a great play to save, and instead of going out of bounds, threw it up, and Carr, you know, like a warrior, went up to get it, and Omir just went through him, like went square through him, Ronnie Lott style, and Carr was limping. You could tell he was hurt, and he just wasn't going to come out of that game. You knew the player he was. Terry knows he's his leader out there, but, you know, in hindsight, you almost wish they would have let him get a breather, because the second half is a larger trend that we'll talk about. Everything kind of ground to a halt for the Texas offense. The Miami defense all of a sudden looked better than they had all game or all postseason. The Texas offense looked somehow worse. You know, it's not a coincidence, right? You know that Marcus Carr is the kind of the lubricant, the oil that keeps the gears turning, even if, you know, other players are initiating the offense, whether it's Allen or Hunter or Rice sometimes. Marcus Carr is the guy who is the, you know, the swing man on every play almost. So it was tough to see the injury bug come up twice there, because either one of those guys being fully healthy for this game, I'd of course take Disu playing all game, or Carr not having that injury, I think changed this game. There's a couple other things we'll talk about that could have gone differently and changed the outcome of this game. I'm not saying it's in dispute. There was things Texas didn't do, but it was, you know, it was a pretty hard game to watch in the second half as the narrative seemed to shift on the game, you know, at the same time the refereeing did.
Yeah, and that was the most stark thing to me, was like you and I were texting about it. Like, that first half was brisk and brief, and they were playing some fun basketball, and the refs were staying out of it. And it felt good. It felt like what that type of game should feel like, what an Elite Eight game, what honestly a Final Four or a championship level game should feel like. It was fun. It was loose. The players were really just playing basketball. And then the officials kind of realized that they hadn't made themselves the show yet in that game. So they decided to make themselves a show. Now, I will say, Texas picked up two really dumb fouls back-to-back early in the second half. I was like, that might come back to bite them in the keister late. And well, it did, to the tune of a 17 free throw disparity between Miami and the Longhorns. Miami 25 of 27 from the line, Texas 7 of 10. And that's just in the second half. Each team shot just 5 in the first half. Miami goes nearly 5 minutes in the end of the game without scoring a field goal. All of their points in the closing 4 minutes and 40 seconds of the game came via whistle. That's a problem, and I would say that about any team. If the refs are deciding the game to that much of a degree, and we're not even talking about the quality of the calls, because the quality of the calls also needs to be called into question. That being said, Texas had opportunities to close this out in a couple of spots. There were a couple of bad possessions, rush possessions that I wish they had. Maybe slowed things down a little bit and made an extra pass, dribbled the extra ball a couple of extra times. Like, there are opportunities where Texas could not have let the refs make the decision for them. That being said, the refs seemed to be intent on making themselves the star of the show, and they did.
It was hard to watch. Like, you know, we texted about it, and that first half was, you know, incredible, with two teams really just executing well, different players getting going, scoring in different ways, but just good basketball. And, you know, a bitter white guy tweeted it out. You know, it's almost always if one, it seems like if one half is called so loose, the second half is going to be called tighter, and Texas probably could have adjusted to it. But I don't know that anyone anticipated the pendulum to swing quite as much as it did, right? Just a bit of the game flow. Miami got out early 9-2. Texas in the rest of that half outscored them 43-28 to take a big lead into halftime. I remember, you know, thinking 12 points at halftime with this Texas team that's never lost when leading. They were 21-0 and in the second half, like something drastic would have to happen for this to go a different way. And look, there were a couple things, right? Texas shot very well in the first half from three. They shot 3 of 12 in the second half from three, right? Miami they have a kind of trap defense where they dare you to break it, move the ball around, and Texas did a great job, even in the second half, moving the ball to get wide open three-point looks. Like, their three-point percentage in the first half wasn't an outlier, because they probably had 80% of their looks be wide open. In the second half, they had open looks, they just weren't following, and that happens. There was, again, some Miami run. They shot better. Wong came to play in the second half. You know, the ACC player of the year, give him credit. He showed up where the Texas just absolutely shut him down. He showed up in the second half. But 70-60 after the Mitchell alley-oop looked like, okay, Texas has got this thing. They still have a 10-point lead. There's 9 minutes remaining. And then from there, a 13-2 spurt, basically to get a 73-72 advantage going into the final minutes, right? That's where Gerald talked about the free throws really started to show up. After each team shot five in the first half, Miami shot 27 in the second half to Texas's 10. It was 79-79 with a minute to go. And that's probably I think we tweeted it out, one of the more controversial calls. I mean, this year has been loaded with them, right? You pick one, but we'll say the non-safety in the Alabama game against Bryce Young. I was kicking it old school with the non-5 seconds that's been debunked to be about 4.5 seconds. Against Arizona that cost Texas the game in 2011. This one will be called the over-the-back Brock out. When Brock was boxing out.
Brock out with your box out?
Yes, exactly. And this is at literally the one-minute mark, right? 79-79 game. Just Marcus Carr's been battered by Omir, so he's on 4 fouls. That was his 4th foul. Next one, he's out. Brock boxes him out. He's already made contact. Omir jumps. Brock, feeling for that body, keeps going backwards. And, you know, that is illegal to do once you're boxed out, to just jump over someone. That is 100%, by the definition of the rule book, an over-the-back call. They called it, right? If it had been called on Brock and they had to overturn it, that might be tougher. But they called it against Omir. It was originally called against him. Then they overturned it to make it a foul against Brock Cunningham. Omir laid on the floor knowing that he'd fouled out. Everyone in the arena knew he fouled out. The only 4 people on earth who didn't know he fouled out were the officials. And so, okay, he makes 2 more free throws. That's a common theme. To give them the lead, 81-79. But then immediately goes down again on Marcus Carr, who's trying to do it all himself. And I'm not upset that he forced it, but who's the player who comes on the double team as he's going up for a shot and makes, to his credit, a clean steal, but Omir, who should have been checked out. They go down, hit 2 more free throws. All of a sudden, they're up 4. It's a literal 6-point swing in a game that was tied. So, you know, it's pretty difficult to swallow that call. There were others. The traveling that somehow was called on Texas and resulted in 2 free throws. There was a lob to Omir where Bishop got back, and then even the announcer's like, oh, he didn't touch him. He just got close. That was a 3-point play. There was multiple just phantom calls down low. I mean, Brock, poor guy, had probably 3 of them called against him.
Defenders, no. There were some reputation calls against Brock. And, like, you gotta put that, like, sure. I understand Brock is who he is. But also, like, reputation calls, sure, in the NCAA tournament, get rid of it.
I agree. And I don't know. Like, Miami was a guard-led team. The whole scouting report on them is they're guard-heavy. They have maybe the best 3-guard backcourt, you know, in the tournament. And Texas did a good job. They shut Wong down in the first half. They limited Pack, who had a good game, but, you know, didn't go supernova like he did in the round before. They did have a player who I think hit 99 of 99 shots. Miller. And so, you know, that happens. But they had another good game plan where they said, we're going to let him in the paint and try to, you know, guard him one-on-one and not give up any three-pointers, keep it close, take their guards out. And they did. And so when Texas did that and changed the game, Miami is reliant entirely on one big man. So when we say it's important that their big man should have fouled out, it's because they don't have another big man on that team, even without Dylan Dessou, that can handle the Longhorns offensively or defensively, and especially when he was out, the Longhorns own the offensive glass. So, you know, let's call it a tie game down the stretch. That guy out, really beneficial to the Longhorns. So, I mean, again, not to sit here and just drudge it up. It was a great run. Really, really sour taste that's how it ended.
And I think that's the story of the game and where we can put a pin in it, right? It's like, this was an incredible run with one of the most fun teams I've ever seen in a year that could have gone a very different direction. When Chris Beard was suspended and ultimately fired, like, you and I had conversations like, is this going to be just like one of those what if type of teams where we're talking in 10 years or 15 years about, man, that 2023 team could have been something. And so the fact that, like, we're able to still be frustrated by the fact that Texas legitimately could have played for a national championship is a mixed bag, because yes, this was a year that could have been a lost year. This was a year that very much could have been a what if year, an understandable Texas goes, you know, 10 wins fewer. They win 22 games instead of 29 games, right? Like, there's a big difference there. But no, we're looking at the third winningest team in school history, right? We're looking at a team that made the Elite Eight for the first time since you and I were on campus, right? This is a team that achieved a lot and went out and really achieved a lot of its goals in spite of all the weird things that happened.
This should be nothing but celebrated. We haven't gotten here in, you know, a decade and a half, right? There was a point when we just expected to make deep tournament runs. There was a point we expected to win 10 football games too, right? We understand that it's been a tough decade for the big kind of two men's sports. We understand there's been some great players in that time and just weren't able to put it together. The fact that this team, with all the guys who came back and said, no, this year, this team, when you saw, you know, Timmy Allen just absolutely in his press conference couldn't hold it together talking about how much he loves this team. When Terry in the locker room was telling him they have nothing to, you know, to hang their heads for, Allen couldn't even make eye contact. He was so distraught, you know, hearing Terry talk about this team, hearing the young guys, hearing, you know, Mitchell, who's a heralded freshman, knows he has, you know, the talent to play in the NBA one day, talk about how, you know, they'll never play on a team like this. Like, this team had that it factor. It had something special. It had the stuff. Great guards, a lot of experience, athleticism on the bigs, guys who can get hot and shoot, fantastic defense. Like, that's the resume. That's why people pick Texas as a dark horse to win the championship. I think that's why they were a sneaky favorite. They had all of those things, and then they even had a pretty good path through, had they gotten through this Miami team, though UConn looks good too. But I mean, three, besides UConn, brand new Final Four entrants. This has been a wild, crazy year. Why not us? Why not Texas to be the stability when no one else had it in that year? I mean, like I said, it's to be celebrated. A great year. This, with the loss on this, they fell to 8-2 in neutral site games, which is phenomenal. They defended the mood as opening that with a fantastic record. 10 wins against AP ranked teams, set a single season record. Gerald mentioned the 29 wins are third all time, just two off the program record. So, you know, a lot of things to celebrate, a lot of things to cheer. It was a great team. It's a team we'll always remember. Would have loved for it to at least be a Final Four team. That would have felt more fitting for this team. And I'll always hate that they weren't, but, you know, just smile, because it was a fun team. A lot of those guys will never play again for the Longhorns. And, you know, we just have to kind of stomach that and remember the good times.
As we remember the good times, for his trouble, leading Texas to a 22-7 record, taking over as the interim coach after Chris Beard was suspended and then ultimately fired. Rodney Terry was named the 26th basketball coach in program history on Tuesday. Officially was an announcement. The news got out there on Monday, but Tuesday was the official announcement. Chris Del Conte shared an interesting nugget. There's this weird storyline happening with all the national pundits and talking heads, blah, 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 about why hasn't Rodney Terry been offered the job? Why hasn't Rodney Terry been offered the job? And anybody with any sense in their brain about how Chris Del Conte operates was like, it'll happen. right after the season. And lo and behold, it happened right after the season. Chris Del Conte said in his remarks in the introductory press conference that he wanted to hire Rodney Terry after that overtime win against Rice based on the leadership he saw and all of that. But he wanted to make a logical decision and not an emotional one. So he followed his process right after the season. The contract was inked. $3 million a year, so a $2 million discount from what they're paying Chris Beard this last year. So not only do we need to find out, will we find out if Rodney Terry can keep the ship going? Because really, there hasn't been much attrition out, you know, on the coaching staff and the systems-wise. So can he keep the ship going? Can he reload talent? And can he get Texas back to the heights that they reached this year?
Yeah, I mean, again, those heights, the first Elite Eight since 2008, won the Big 12 tournament, those eight wins against the AP Top 25. Winning the Big 12 tournament is phenomenal. I hope they do it one more time before they're out. The quote, you said the CDC quote. The other quote I liked was Ron Holland when asked about Rodney Terry being named the head coach. That's great because now I get to play for that team. I still get to play for that team, right? Like, that sells you something, right? Rodney Terry, the guy who, you know, one of the most coveted recruits in the past 50 years in Kevin Durant that every school in America wanted. It was Rodney Terry at Texas who said, come to Texas, change the program and culture here, make it something bigger, come here, and got Kevin Durant to show up and put the horns up, right? He led that recruitment. It was, you know, we talk about Holland, who's you know, arguably one of the three best players in this class, at least McDonald's All-American. There's another five-star McDonald's All-American, Johnson, on that recruitment, who also is you know, firm to Texas. That's two five-stars who are looking forward to play for Rodney Terry. I don't think they'll be his last. I think Terry, as you saw all season, from the point he took over, is a player's coach. He's a guy who the players love. I mean, since game one, since the Big 12 tournament, they've been saying, give this man the job. I mean, they love our guy, RT. That Rice quote was interesting because before Del Conte said it, I was thinking about it. I remember watching that game. I remember, you know, Gerald and I came on this podcast afterwards and said, you know, this, give it some time. This could be a long season. You know, we don't know how these players are going to respond. First game back, we beat Gonzaga a couple, you know, week and a half earlier. Like, it's pretty crazy change to play Rice versus Gonzaga when you blew Gonzaga out of the gym and then you had to go to overtime and scrape. But in that overtime game, they scraped. They showed up. They were resilient. They stored something in the bank that probably got them through the Big 12 and NCAA tournament. And that's Rodney Terry day one. That's Rodney Terry figuring out how to call the offense in addition to the defense, where he was kind of the defensive coordinator before. You know, he's figuring things out. The team is emotionally, I mean, it was 24 hours later, emotionally uneven from it. It was crazy, right? It was as much an example as an Elite Eight run. And I'm glad Del Conte felt that way then. Del Conte has a pretty good read on coaches and has a pretty good track record on hiring them. And, you know, it's very easy when you know, one of the best resumes in the country based on this season is in your own backyard to hire your own coach. But I think he spots those intangibles sometimes in addition to just a good record. And, you know, we'll see what Rodney Terry becomes over the next few years. But one thing that we know he will be is you know, a phenomenal human and a friend to the players. And I just will say this before belaboring it too much further. Their run through the tournament was based on game plan, was based on scheme. Now, there's other great coaches on that staff, so spread the wealth around for sure. Kudos to the whole staff. But Colgate, the best three-point shooting, you know, you saw how they took that away from them. Penn State, completely different game plan. They went in and executed it, and they ran it to perfection against Xavier. Again, you've now played probably the three out of the, let's call it four, best three-point shooting teams in the entire tournament when you get to Xavier, and you just shut them down, at least in the first half, especially, you know, 30% lower than their season average. Just take what they want to do completely out of their hands and then go win the game. And of course, that's the players, but it's game plan based. And then to navigate around an injury in that Xavier game as well, just really incredible coaching, honestly. Like, take all the emotional stuff out of it, the CV speaks for itself.
So we'll see if he has what it takes next year as Texas looks to rebuild. He said in his remarks that his first real priority is probably to re-recruit the guys that are on campus and keep them around, which I think is a pretty solid choice because there's a lot of guys that could take another year, have another option. But we'll see as Rodney Terry takes over as the 26th head coach in men's basketball history. The number 21 Texas Longhorn, newly minted number 21 Texas Longhorn baseball team sweeps the number 14 Texas Tech Red Raiders to push their win streak to 14, currently leading 5-2 in the top of the ninth with a runner on and one out. So hopefully we'll have an update for that as the game ends. But we'll talk about Texas Tech walk-off city toward the last two games. But the first one was a pretty decisive win. Lucas Gordon did what he did and the Bats got it done. This Texas team, you and I talked about it. Could they take the lessons that they learned in kind of that run of lesser known teams, lesser talented teams, and turn them into wins against a team with some pulse? And they did that against Texas Tech, who was supposed to be a pretty formidable adversary, and just put the boots to them.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think supposed to, you know, even applies here. As much as I want to see Tech torn down pegs, not just one or two, but many pegs at any given time. They beat Oklahoma State, who's a really good team, because they opened their Big 12 play last weekend. So Tech was flying high. But you're talking to the team with the longest win streak in the nation right now with 14 games. UT needed to be home playing in the friendly confines in a bad way. And they have gotten the bats going. The pitching has stayed, you know, fairly good. They've fixed some fielding things. They're really looking like, when Gerald and I did our preview, what we thought the best case scenario of this team could look like. Now, admittedly, there were some lesser talented teams in that buildup to Tech, and there are some very good teams in the Big 12. But opening with, you know, one of the worst three favorites to win the conference this year, and sweeping them, that's a real good sign. And there were some players who I think have fully announced themselves, not just in a little way. Porter Brown, you know, all over this entire week. Dylan Campbell.
Downtown.
Eric Kennedy, who is expected to kind of be the senior leadership on this team, is doing, you know, he's just on a heater right now, doing the things he's supposed to be doing. G-Wagon, fantastic nickname, fantastic player. Garrett Gilmette is coming into his own in a really, really great way. Very different style than Silas. He's a much more exuberant and vocal kind of leader, but as a former catcher, I watched the catcher to see how a team's feeling, and when the catcher's got swagger, the whole team's got swagger, man. He's the tail that wags the dog, basically. So I love to see it, him getting the sweep clinching walk-off in the second of two walk-offs against Tech. And that bat flip, just beautiful. Knew where the camera was after the bat flip, like a good WWE heel. I mean, after Texas pushed their pile on the Saturday walk-off, they started kind of at home plate and then just gradually pushed it in front of Tech's dugout. Probably a complete coincidence. I was like, ooh, this team's got a little salt to them. They don't like that everyone has written them off. But that could have also pissed Tech off. But look, Texas in both of these walk-offs gave up late runs, which, you know, had been the bane of their existence the past 2 years. But they answered. They answered in both cases in the ninth, did what they had to do. All in all, great homestand. Is literally as good as you could have asked for with 14 straight wins. Fantastic opener to the Big 12. The team is flying on a high now. Number 21, you know, entered the rankings for the first time this year. Well-deserved. A lot of challenge ahead of them. We know that. We know there's still a lot to do. But man, with Chicken Little sky is falling, but you know, 2 weeks ago, man, does this season look different right now than it did, you know, in the beginning of this month.
NORAD is currently tracking that bat flip somewhere over the Great Plains. It actually just passed Lubbock to give them a reminder of what happened over the weekend. No, I think there are like two things to talk about with these walk-offs, right? It's like one, squeaky bum time with the relievers, right? There's a little bit of like, that's not always going to be able to save you. So the bullpen still has some issues to figure out. The bullpen still needs to, but like, then you see like Zane Morehouse come in relief and went perfect for, you know, 3 2/3 innings on Friday. So like there are options there. You know, Texas is getting some arms, some experience against A&M in this game. So they're still developing them. And that's the beauty of these midweek series against, you know, an SEC opponent, but also Texas found a way to win the games. And guys like Porter Brown or Garrett Guillemette, like, they got it done. Porter Brown downtown got his Big 12 Player of the Week. We love to see downtown getting those accolades because he earned it. Man had a big, big weekend. 6-15, two double, two homers, eight runs batted in, scored six times, and the game-winning run in two of those four wins in the week. Next up, we already mentioned it.
I was just going to say, Jared, I want to speak to the bullpen a little bit because Morehouse moving from our Saturday starter to our either closer or we just – need a second starter almost, right? The 3.5 innings is, you know, starter one, starter two at that point, which is an interesting strategy. You know, he's got, you know, the stamina to go a little bit longer, but it's really interesting. He got two wins in two different ways, right? Friday, 3.5 innings of perfect baseball. Saturday, where it got to that squeaky bum time you're talking about, he came in and just got the last out, but that's all you need when your team gets a walk-off in the next inning. So he got two wins in this one and basically very different fashions, but ultimately is going to be our first name that you want out of the bullpen. He may not always be the first if they save him, depending on situational, as our last guy out of the bullpen, but looks to be probably, along with Lucas Gordon, of course, our most important arm, as we all thought, right? That was the Saturday starter. You saw this with Tristan Stevens when he moved back. Pierce is willing to experiment a little bit. So the rotation, they did a Sunday kind of arms day, and that led to some interesting stuff with each team throwing six pitchers. But, you know, they'll figure it out. But if you're strong in the front, and you have a guy who has no fear, like Nightmare, and closes it out, then I think that's a good equation. Just a couple things need to hit, and a couple guys need to get a little bit of control figured out, and then I like where they are going forward.
I also like where they are going forward. Well, I don't really like where they are because they're currently in College Station, but they're currently beating A&M and threatening to add some insurance runs there. So they've got their first road trip in 3 weeks, but they're looking solid to get at least one win, split it. And then they're heading to Stillwater to take on the Oklahoma State Cowboys, who are, again, another team that has been picked to win the conference. So it's going to be a tough weekend for them. There's an opportunity for Texas to really make a statement for themselves and figure out who they are and where they're going to stack up in the conference. So now's the part of the show where we whip around the rest of campus and we down the 40. So a little bit of a bittersweet national championship week for men's swimming. Texas took third. Men's swimming took third at the national championship, ending their streak of 9 straight top 2 finishes in the NCAA championships, the 36th top 3 finish in his century of work at Texas for Eddie Reese.
You can look at this two ways, right? I've seen a lot of chatter that said, oh no, the sky's falling for our swimming program, sarcastically, of course, but everyone kind of, you know, is looking for a reason why. If you watched this, it's actually a really, really impressive showing from them, right? They had 11 All-Americans across 31 events, another 14 honorable mention All-Americans. They won 3 events outright, the 800 free, which they set both a Longhorn and an American record. Luke Hobson won 2 events, the 500 free with a Longhorn record and the 200 free, making him the first Longhorn since 2018 to win multiple events at the same national title. So looks really good there. The psych sheet basically is the, you know, suggested points if where you're seated based on your times coming into the national championship held up, that's how many points you would earn, right? So Texas had a lot of people qualify, but some of them were in the lower scoring point ranges. So they outscored their psych sheet by a massive 170.5 margin out of their 384 points, by far the most of anyone points above seed. Like, I think the next best is at like 60. So they were just absolutely above where maybe people thought they were, and some people were, you know, asking if Texas was sandbagging or, you know, I don't know. There's SwimSwam is an interesting website. You have to kind of say good performance. The thing that I also look forward to, right, if you look at by class, the highest scoring class per school in the country was the University of Texas junior class, swimmers that will be and divers will be coming back for a senior year next year, 127 individual points ahead of Cal, who was the second highest class with their junior class. Cal, the champions, of course, who were really good. California returns 193 points, Texas 190. So you know who it's going to be. It's going to be Cal versus Texas. The interesting thing this year is Cal had a bunch of sixth-year seniors who did the COVID year transfers in, some international swimmers as well. They kind of stepped stacked the sheet, and good on them for doing it, right? That's the strategy, and it worked for them to win a national championship. But, you know, Texas, I'm not expecting Eddie Reese not to have a trick or two up his sleeve. Returns a lot of talent. They do lose some, but returns a lot. Has some good-looking recruits coming in, so it will be interesting if they have a few portal additions in the coming months to next year's squad. I would be shocked if they don't.
We'll need to do some math on correlation between Texas national championships and Olympic years. We'll have to do some math. We'll have that for you next week. Softball, perfect on the week. They 13-2 run ruled SFA before busting out the brooms and doing some walk-offs of their own against Texas Tech. Friday, 3-2. Friday 3-2, Saturday 4-3, Sunday 8-3, less dramatic than the men, but still all sweeps for those folks from Lubbock. They rode the brooms back to the Plains.
Look, and here's the thing. I mean, Lubbock, it's so flat out there that you don't even really need to sweep. The wind will come in and sweep it for you, but I appreciate the Longhorns helping them nonetheless. Now, I do love that these each featured two sweeps. The women did it with the Friday, Saturday, men with the Saturday, Sunday, and then one comfortable win. There was some symmetry in this. There was some good pitching in this as well. Stelcheck went six innings, six Ks, came with no decision because that was 2-1 at the time when they headed into the seventh. But Leanne Good, who you know, I can't sing enough praises, scored loot. She is indeed in multiples of ways. Put one in center field to score Lou Gilbert, and then Mia Scott, who we know is really good, doubles to bring in Camille Corona. It was the setting the tone for what would be a weekend of Tech walk-offs. You saw basically Reese Atwood, who's another freshman who I've talked about, who I love, who's highly rated and living up to it. Another, you know, likely freshman All-American hit a two-run bomb to get them to 4-3 on Saturday. And then on Sunday, like Gerald said, just a really easy, casual 8-3 win, with three of those coming right in the bottom of the first.
Everybody loves a good cash Sunday, right? You get home from church, you take off in church clothes, you put on sweatpants, just have a little cash Sunday, 8-3 win. But that sets up the big series of the year for, honestly, both teams. Texas heading to Norman to take on number one OU. It's going to be a top 10 matchup. Texas, I think, still sits at 10, while OU obviously sits atop the charts. Texas was one of the only teams to beat OU in a single game in the regular season last year. Hopefully, they can improve their results from last year. On the hard surface, number three men's tennis with a pair of top 10 wins. They go to Fort Worth in top number one TCU 4-1 before going out to the before coming back home and knocking off number 10 USC 4-1 as well. Texas tennis looking formidable in the outdoor season.
Yeah, that should be enough to push them at least to number two. You know, after that week, if not all the way up, is my call here. They 4-1 in both of these. It's their second time, by the way. This is that I love. Avenging their loss this season. They lost to number one Ohio State, and they lost to TCU in the indoor national championship. They have now avenged both of their two losses by playing them a second time and beating them. I love that. Fool me once, shame on you. This is also their second time defeating the top-ranked team because of both of those cases. They, in both matches, I believe, won the doubles and three singles. Spaziri and Pierre Usbali had wins, ranked wins against TCU over 16 and 21. And then in dramatic fashion, the doubles all went to tiebreaker against USC before they were able to get the doubles point there. Spaziri was, as would be expected, phenomenal all the way through. Great comeback against USC and just looked good all weekend.
For his efforts, picked up his ninth career Big 12 Player of the Week, supplanting friend of the show, Yuya Ito's school record of 8.
That's conference record of 8.
Conference record. Oh, my gosh. I'm sorry, Yuya. You're going to be mad at us. It's okay. Conference record of 8 Player of the Week awards. Number 14, women's tennis. Nearly completely sweeps the week with a 6-1 win over Iowa State, and then completely sweeps West Virginia didn't even require a tiebreaker in that one.
Yeah, it's absolutely dominated receiving votes, West Virginia. And then the Iowa State win was interesting because you know that Texas is coming off a national championship. There's been some teams that thought they could take some shots at Texas as the Big 12 favorite this year. Iowa State, number six, has had a great season, admittedly. So really big win for them to also win in emphatic fashion, 6-1. Sabina Zanilova and Charlotte Shavadapone each getting ranked wins for their troubles.
You know what they say, you come at the king, you best not miss. Sabina, not to let Elliot get his own shine, wins the ladies' Big 12 Player of the Week. We don't have stats on her record, but she'll probably break one at some point. Number eight, women's golf finishes fifth in the Ping ASU Invitational with seven teams ranked in the top 15. So a big, big outing for them. They're still trying to get their feet underneath them, and they've got an opportunity to continue to build some momentum.
Yeah, coming off a win last week, a tournament win, this is a really tough field. The interesting thing is this is they had a freshman lead them, which is not crazy. This is a really young team. But our girl, friend of the pod, Emily Odwin from where, Gerald?
Barbados, baby. Bayesians stand up.
That's right. Barbados at UT. Yeah, Jonathan Jones, Emily Odwin. Just
Gerald Goodridge, same type, same classification.
Absolutely. This is undoubtedly the most Bayesian podcast that covers UT sports. I'm sure of that. This is the ninth time this season that Texas had a player recorded top 10 finish. And the craziest part of that is Odwin is the sixth Longhorn to have a top 10 finish this season. So they've had a lot of people scoring in different tournaments, and they're getting performances all the way up. It's not like they have a clear one. They really have a pretty mixed 1-5, which is great for the tournament, great for match play. They just have to get there. So keep the consistency, stay in the top 10, keep your nose there, get to match play, win the dang thing.
Sophomore All-American Bo Park is going to actually be at the Augusta Women's National, which one of 72 selected from around the world. Big honor for her. Park, one of just 72 selected from around the world for that honor. So awesome. Excited to see her there. On the men's side, number 10, at the Valspar Invitational, Texas finished third behind number 4, North Carolina, number 3, Texas Tech. There were six top 10 teams in the running, including 2, 3, 4, 7, and 9.
Yeah, they jumped up two spots in the final day thanks to the second-best team round of the day, a 10-under in that final round, finishing 4-under and 1-under in the first two. Brian Stark was the low Longhorn, finishing the tournament 9-under, number 4 player in the country right now. Christian Moss finished tied for 9th. They were on the right side of par. Need to get the whole team there again. Not gonna besmirch a third place finish with six top 10 teams. They're looking good, but it's got to be. If you want to win those things, you need about 4 Longhorns getting in the red numbers.
Get them all on the right side of 0.
All right, Gerald. Now let's take a look at the world through some burnt orange lenses. Coming up this week, I guess the day you listen to this actually comes out on Wednesday. Texas Relays will be beginning. It's a 95th Clyde Littlefield Texas Relays. Was one of the biggest events in the track season for all schools, not just Longhorns. It's a field rife with top 10 and top 25 teams on both the men's and women's side. Obviously, it's more than that. It's high school athletes, it's professional athletes, it's former Longhorns. So it's a fun time. For a team that's had a great indoor season and looking to continue on that, it's a big one with folks really coming out. We'll find out exactly what this team is made of.
Texas Relays is one of the 3 best sporting events on campus. Like, it's just such a fun time, and like seeing the high school athletes compete and like be out there, it's just incredible. Avoid 6th Street at all costs Relays weekend, but outside of that, like, it's just absolutely incredible.
Yeah, beach volleyball finished their inaugural season with a win over Missouri State. This season really didn't count. Next season they'll be eligible to start counting these, so I assume that means they'll start winning. They were just out there for fun, but it's the first year, and they played the best, right? They played the number 1 team. They played, I think, 6 top 10 teams in their short little 8-game season. So a good learning experiment for Coach Elliott, who I think we talked about last week, and if not, was just named by USA Volleyball, the like governing body of American volleyball, with the title of all-time great coach. I don't know how many people are bestowed that honor. I imagine it's a short list, but I imagine we're in good hands here with Jared Elliott on the sand as much as the hardwood. We'll figure out next season when they kick it off where the team is, what they're looking like.
They've got some work to make up. TCU absolutely ran them off the beach, I guess is the right way to say it. 5-0, but TCU is like far and away going to probably win the national championship there. So like TCU is the best team in the country by far. But it's a good outing, and they got the W. They got their first W in the storied 3 weeks history of that program.
And Del Conte starts a beach volleyball program. He wants them to get to number one. He knows that's his thing. He started the one at TCU. Now they're number one. It's a short time before that number follows its way down I-35. Not I-35, but making her way across on I-10, completing the other two-thirds of the triangle here. Longhorn goalkeeper Savannah Madden will be coming to Houston, joining the Houston Dash. I've been out to a couple Dash games. They're fun, man. Like I like a Dynamo game as well. It's a great stadium. The Dash are actually very, very good, have won the league a couple times. They're really good team. Glad Madden stayed for her senior season to have the great season that they did. They'll, you know, look to replace her between the sticks for the Longhorns, but she now starts her professional career in Texas. And speaking of keeping it Texas, Shaylee Gonzalez announced that she's staying. She's coming back to play another year, run it back for Coach Vic. They didn't have ultimately the season or the finish to the season that they wanted, but it's good with a young team, you know, to get some of those more senior players to come back and do it again. It worked out for, you know, Marcus Carr and Timmy Allen. And on the men's side, when you get the super seniors who transfer for 1 year to come for a second, take that COVID year.
You can look at this at several angles, right? Like, the way to win in basketball generally is to be pretty old, and that these COVID years are helpful. But also, like, Shea Gonzalez can just fill up the bucket. So, like, she's great on offense, and she's a senior leader. Like, what more do you need? We saw Texas take advantage of a guy like Sir Jabari Rice on the men's side who can fill up the bucket. And Shea Gonzalez is kind of, I don't want to say cut from similar cloth, but like that's the mold that she's going to be is a scorer that can also lead your team in experience.
All right, Jared, let's wrap this section up with a little bit of Dell news, not the computers, of course. It's the Dell match play. Played at the Austin Country Club this weekend. Scottie Scheffler lost a tough one in a playoff in the Final Four, I guess, if you will, to put it into terms. Tough break for him. His buddy ended up beating him and winning. Some may have said he threw it so his buddy could win. I don't think Scotty does that. I think he's a competitor. But there was a moment. A lot of Longhorns, Austin icons turned out for it. Arch Manning was there. Bijan was notably there. There was a moment where Scotty Scheffler and Bijan embraced with a handshake. I think the Longhorns posted all over their socials. They're each wearing a polo shirt out on the golf course. And the way the two human beings at the top, at the pinnacle of their athletic prowess in two different sports, each fill out a polo in very different ways, I will say was pretty hilarious. Scotty, I mean, he's an athlete. Golfers are athletes, but just a slightly different build than the muscles on top of muscles on top of muscles in which Bijan is composed.
Very, very different athlete. A lot of people like golf because you can play it with a beer in your hand. And I'm honestly not sure if Bijan has ever had a carb in his life. So there's a difference in athletic needs there.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think mustard is a carb. You maybe goes on top of carbs. Scotty,
very, very, very not a carb. Very not a carb. Scotty, low carb approved.
Scotty has announced his master's menu. The tradition is that the reigning champion, and this was 2 weeks ago, but I don't think we talked about it on here, the reigning champion of the Masters presents the menu for the, you know, kickoff to the next year's Masters. And I will say it sounds a lot like the athlete's dining hall on the 40 acres. It's good. It's all great. Cheeseburger sliders serve Scotty style, which I don't know what that means. I'm hoping it means with some Dijon mustardson on it. Can't confirm. Texas ribeye or black and red fish. Classic. Like it. You know, This is very very Highland Park so far. Ending with a warm chocolate chip skillet cookie. I got no problem with that. The interesting parts of it, there's a tortilla soup and a firecracker shrimp. I think he kept to some Texas roots there. Firecracker shrimp is the wild card, but cheeseburger, Texas ribeye or redfish, you know, keeping it coastal. You know, it's all, there's some Texas nods, but he played it safe. I think he didn't take in too many chances. He knows he's playing well right now. He doesn't have to try to, you know, cut the dog leg. He just plays his game.
It's a strong menu. They were talking about it during the Elite Eight game, and I was very, very hungry. I did not have anything near the quality of that night. But my wife's a great cook, but, ribeyes are ribeyes. I think I'd take a ribeye or anything any day of the week.
Yeah, the Elite Eight was more a bourbon diet. Gerald, let's, at least afterwards, let's move it to a little Godzilla.
Definitely ate my feelings.
A little Godzilla-tron. What are you watching on your giant screen?
Bourbon and nachos. That was Saturday night. No, so it was a weird week. I didn't talk about this last week. I was in shirts going home visiting the folks and saw Scream 6 with Mario, friend of the show who doesn't listen. Aggie Mario doesn't listen. It was fine. I love the Scream movie, so it's fine. If you like Scream movies, you'll probably like it. If you don't, you won't. So skip it. Puss in Boots, The Last Wish, way better than the third sequel in the Shrek spinoff series should be. Legitimately had a really good time watching it with my kids. My son watched it like 3 times this weekend, and we let him because it was pretty solid. It does that like blue humor that the Shrek movies always did. That's like, I'm glad my kid didn't get that joke. I got that joke, but I'm glad my kid didn't. But great cast. Really enjoyed it. John Mulaney is the villain in it. Really, really fun. And then this is a special one. Also, just check this out. It's on Apple Music and Spotify. There's the new single out called Junkie by Mal Smith and the Singers Choir. Mal Smith has been a longtime listener of the podcast. We've connected with on social media on various forums. Good dude. This isn't just me like saying it because he's a friend of mine. Like, I really liked it. It's the first single with his band, Mal Smith and the Singers Choir. It gave me like Sean McConnell vibes, which I really appreciate. It's got a little bit of that kind of folk mixed with Texas country, which I really appreciate. So check it out. Give it a stream. Junkie, J-U-N-K-Y by Mal Smith and the Sinners Choir. I enjoyed it. Added it to my like Windows Down playlist because I really enjoyed it. And you might too.
And Gerald said it, you know, we don't hype things just because you're a friend of the podcast. But, you know, also, if you're a friend of the podcast, we might just hype you up. So you if you are, you know, an artist, a musician, you have a small business, you know, just start retweeting, talking about us, posting about us, become an interactor with our social medias and otherwise, and you know, we'll pay it forward, right? This is a world of scratching backs. Now I kid, Gerald. This week I watched two things that were not at all related, but I liked both of them. I finished The Banshees of Ed Sheeran. That we talked about last week. I don't think we talked about the fact. I think that was off air when we talked about that both of us had jokingly to our wives called it The Banshees of Ed Sheeran, and they groaned at their level of dad joke. We then, after the podcast, looked up Banshees of Ed Sheeran on Twitter to find Rebecca Black and others had beat us to the joke. I'm sure others had beat us to the joke. It's a good movie. I think In Bruges is better. I wonder if I wasn't comparing it to that, if I would have liked it even more. I liked it a lot, just for the accents and the, you know, it's a silly, simple story that doesn't require a lot. It's I would call it a one-act play, but it's long. It's over 2 hours, so it's a multi-act play, but in one small universe on this, you know, kind of cool-looking island just off the coast of Ireland with nothing to do, so they have to make their own drama. It's an interesting watch with its kind of, if you know the director and you've seen In Bruges, it's brand of dark humor. And speaking of dark, I also watched the Luther movie, which is really good. Like, I love BBC's Luther. Like, I love that show. My wife, even if it, well, she loves Idris Elba, but she also loves...
Who doesn't?
No one.
I do not blame her one iota for that.
She loves Idris Elba. And again, I do not blame her one smidge. She also loves Luther the show, the griminess, grittiness, the Britishness, the kind of like surrealness. She also loves Black Mirror. So there's a theme there of like intense psychological British thrillers if I were doing a Netflix category. We've watched the show for years and both loved it. And so when we heard there was a movie, we were kind of curious. They use their budget well. Like, it looks really, really good. They shot it well. It's an interesting, compelling story. You'll watch through your fingers at some points because it's you know, it's a little creepy and quite a bit harrowing and all that, but it's, you know, it's DCI John Lufa, and he's fantastic. And I don't know. It's just, it's a universe that I loved being back in. I won't spoil anything, but there was a point at the end where, like, I literally, like, turned to my wife and I was like, are they about to offer him the role of James Bond? And that's all I'll say. I won't spoil it any further for any who haven't seen it, but I thought that we're going to bridge the two universes for a moment. It's great. You should watch it. I recommend both of them quite highly.
Luther the Show is just a tough watch, so I can't imagine. I haven't been brave enough to watch the movie yet. I also don't ever have time to really, like, rarely have time to sit down and watch a full movie. So we'll see how it goes. Thing with that, my friend, brings us to the part of the show where we honor one of the best traditions in all of college athletics, Big Bertha, and we bang the drum, brought to you by Joe Ruiz. So Kyle, what are you banging the drum on this week?
So ahead of the Sweet 16 showdown with the Xavier Musketeers, it was announced that Serge Ibari Rice had signed a unique NIL deal. He became one of the first three athletes for the Doritos Own the Three campaign. In fact, they're the first three Doritos NIL sponsored athletes in the country. Doritos, a big brand. So I found it interesting, right? Rice had just come off his game where he had, you know, been unbelievable in game one. It wasn't announced yet, but I imagine they must have had some conversation when he just fell off the cliff a bit in game two against Penn State. There was then the question of is there the curse of the Dorito? And to answer that, I say maybe. The other three people named, or the other two named to it, included Houston's Marcus Sasser, who immediately after getting named to this NIL deal got boat raced out of the Sweet 16. So you're already looking bad there. And Virginia Tech's Georgia Amore. So my thought is, this is the curse of the Dorito, this coming from the podcast that both created and announced the official end of the curse of JerMichael Finley. This is real. Before you sign with Doritos, if you are a male basketball player, beware. Because Virginia Tech's Georgia Amore is doing phenomenally for Virginia Tech, who, as a one seed, just made their first Final Four in school history. So for a female athlete, go locos for the Doritos. But for men,
not a sponsor, could be.
Be wary. But if Doritos wants to sponsor this podcast, as we now are no longer, we now control our podcast advertising, then I will say there is no such thing as this curse. So any of you Doritos execs, Fritos, otherwise, any chip executive, hit us up in them DMs.
This is the most embarrassing thing I've ever said. One of my personal claim to fame, like, interesting fact, I have eaten Cool Ranch Doritos in every state I've ever been in. It was a road trip thing for me as a kid, and it kind of just continued to my adulthood. So, like, Doritos,
how many, got a unique how many story. States? How many states have you been? All 50 or, like, continental?
No.
Give me a guess.
Not,
ballpark.
Not
ballpark. Or 48. Let's call it Continental 48.
I'm trying to think. So we drove from Texas to New York City. So a big chunk.
That's a lot. A lot of states.
And then San Antonio to Florida. So we've kind of got, like, a big chunk of, like, the East Coast. Like, I would say, like, 20-ish states I've had Cool Ranch Doritos in, which is all. I definitely did eat them in Hawaii once, so that does count. They're not a part
yes.
of the road trip, but
okay. Yeah. So I'm what I'm hearing, Doritos, we are willing to live stream on our trip from
states.
Texas to Alaska. We will go up on the Alaska trip, making sure if we have to hit multiple states, we will weave through them so that we will finish Gerald's 50 states, 50 Cool Ranch Doritos. Hit us up in the DMs, please.
Send us on a trip. I've never eaten Cool Ranch Doritos in Alabama. Wait, no, I did. Yeah, I did. That counts. I'm trying to think of a place they could send us. But anyway, I'm making the drum this week on player support. One of the things that we saw throughout the year and Tuesday as we're recording this is that there was a slew, feels like a reductive word, but the amount of outpouring of current and former player support from Rodney Terry as he took over and was being courted as the new head coach for the University of Texas is just absolutely mind-boggling. TJ Ford, legend of the game. Kevin Durant, you know, one of the two jerseys that's retired for the basketball team, right? You know, all of the current players, freaking Brock Cunningham asked the last question of the press conference. The entire team was there for the introduction. And it's obviously too early to call if Rodney Terry is going to be a success at Texas as far as basketball goes. You and I have had long conversations about what is a success for Texas basketball. Is an Elite Eight every year a fair expectation? We're not here to adjudicate that. But what I will say is that much of the infrastructure that Chris Beard built is still in place. The roster will need some adjustments, but there are two crown jewels coming in this recruiting class that are staying in this recruiting class because of Rodney Terry. Two recruits does not a program make, and we've all seen on in football and basketball that five-star recruits do not equal wins. But what I will say is that one of the things that indicates, in my mind, potential is the amount of player success and investment. Players were not in on Tom Herman on the 40 acres. Players are now in for Steve Sarkisian. Players were a little bit ambivalent almost to Shaka Smart when he was on campus. Players are all in on Rodney Terry. And so we've said it before, and I'll say it again, a united Texas Longhorn Nation, Chris Del Conte has said it, is a powerful force. Texas now has one of the most formidable home courts in the country with the Moody Center. They were absolutely electric there this year. The stage is set for Texas to be a power in basketball. And so we as fans, one, we've got to continue to support. Well, obviously we'll do that, but like, I love seeing the players support. And to me, those votes of confidence are enough for me to feel good about it, at least 12 hours into the situation.
Seeing the former players who played for him come out in force, seeing the current players come out in force, and in fact, seeing the current college head coaches come out and speak about Rodney Terry, Mark Few, you know, Miami's coach, I think I saw at least five or six tournament coaches ask this question. They all said to do what he did was pretty phenomenal, and anyone who knew him spoke to a man about the type of man that he is. So I think it matters, and I think you know, we'll try this experiment out. There's always a chance it fails, but you're never going to feel bad about it. We don't, you know, wish Charlie Strong and Shaka Smart went differently, but I like hiring a coach who's a good guy. Like, I think it's great. On the chance that it works, that you can get both, I'd love to see that happen.
Love when Texas hires a good coach. Also loves when Texas hires someone who's going to be a good man. That's all we've got for you this week. Kyle, where can the good folks find you on the internet?
You can follow me on Twitter at Kyle Carpenter, or you can follow the Texas Pregamer at Texas Pregamer. Just tweeted a banger out from Texas Pregamer. You can't spell Schlossnagel without loss. So, you know, if you hadn't heard, officially 5-2 was Texas's win over A&M. It's over. But yes, follow all those accounts.
You can follow me on Twitter. I am at GH Goodrich. Follow the show on Twitter at Longhorn Pod. Facebook and Instagram, The Longhorn Republic. Or shoot us an email, longhornrepublicpod@gmail.com. We'll have our friend of the show, Director's Cup Dates, on next week to talk about a preview of the upcoming Director's Cup standings, where Texas stands, and maybe even project how things are going to play out. We'll have some more fun for you in the near future. Thank you so much for tuning in again this week. And until next time, hook 'em.
Hook 'em. A&M sucks.